Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 562. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a whole heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
As I said before we started, I am really getting used to this whole not working thing. It's one of the reasons why I decided, I'm like, well, why not just do the show in the middle of the day and get it out earlier?
No, totally with you. I've been out of work longer than you have, so we're just two unemployed dudes talking about the very, very essential world of professional wrestling.
Yeah. I guess it is not completely surprising that Florida, who really just in general has not been playing well with others, let's say. they are allowing, it would seem like sports in general, to happen in the state of Florida. Without, so long as there is no crowd,
as there is no crowd, and it's a part of a nationally televised television program. Wait, hold on. I know it's here somewhere. I can read the actual governor's decree about on this. I can find this somewhere.
Okay, yeah, because that's at least close enough. While we find the original, but I'm not surprised that Florida decided to do this, because Florida definitely seems like. They definitely like to do things their own way, to say the least.
Yeah, Florida has been lagging behind on their coronavirus response thus far.
Yeah, so they've definitely done that, and it's kind of funny since all the people that were, well, I shouldn't say all of the people spring breaking down there, but a lot of the spring breakers ended up with coronavirus. You would think that maybe that would convince the state that this is a slightly more serious matter. But it is kind of interesting that the WWE obviously gets to fall under this purview. So, tapings will be, well, it's not even tapings, because it's live, or at least they're going to be doing close to live, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the close to live part is also a very important here. It's a big part of why all of this is going on. WWE is under contract, as we well know, to Fox and the USA Network, and it's believed that for sure the USA contract and most likely the Fox contract have it in writing that WWE is only able to do three taped episodes a year, and the ones that count are the two while they're on the European tour and one over the Christmas holiday.
Ah, okay. I was not aware of that part of the proceedings.
Okay, all right. I have the official government thing.
Okay.
This is from the governor of Florida on why the WWE is considered an essential business during a stay-at-home order. Employees at a professional sports and media production with a national audience, meaning television, including any athletes, entertainers, that's very, very important now for why pro wrestling gets to be included in this, production team, executive team, media team, and any others necessary to facilitate, including services supporting such production, only if the location is closed to the general public.
Yeah, I mean, they are really... they are opening up for a lot of possible sports. I mean, there definitely had been some grumblings about professional baseball perhaps returning to Florida at their spring training facilities to play ball without fans. So I'm not surprised that Florida made this a little more vague than just for sports entertainment purposes. They're trying to save the economy, their own economy at the same time here.
That's absolutely what they're doing. Without tourism, Florida is not a manufacturing hotbed or hotbed of much besides tourism, and where older people go to live out the remainder of their lives. And that second part is definitely in conflict with probably the biggest concern is the age of the population of Florida, as these strangers from other states visit Florida to perform in professional wrestling events, as well as any other events that end up being moved to Florida. WWE does have the benefit here of so many of their wrestlers already living in that area between Florida and Tampa. Florida has always been a popular place for wrestlers to live because of the warm weather and because of no state taxes, and then just generally, starting back way back when, Florida was a very popular territory for wrestlers to work. And then when things went national, it still became a great place that wrestlers wanted to go and live the 2 or 3 days a week they wouldn't possibly have at home. Of course, WWE opened up the pre-NXT iteration of their developmental system in Tampa at FCW, and then moved it to Orlando for NXT. So probably the majority of the WWE roster actually lives in within an hour of the WWE Performance Center. Now, who does not live an hour from the WWE Performance Center? One Mr. Jerry the King Lawler, who is over 70 years old and is going to be flying in from Memphis, Tennessee every week.
That's one where I just wonder why they think he's essential.
He is not.
I wasn't sitting there going, oh, man, I was really missing my Jerry Lawler. I feel so much better this week. That, and when they added Zelina Vega to the announce booth, I'm like, are you really trying to kill a 70-year-old? Like, is that what's happening here? They decided to surround a 70-year-old with more people than AEW. Good for you guys for winning that distinction. Because it's like, oh my god. But yeah, I would be completely fine with no Jerry Lawler.
Fine with them doing the once-a-month marathon tapings. Obviously, the strongest argument is to just shut down completely. But if you're going to have the compromise, it was, let's just go there for a week, once a month, tape everything we can. And I understand that because WWE has the three main shows of the week that are 2 or 3 hours long, plus they also still have Main Event for some reason and 205 Live. They have 3 or 4 times the amount of TV that AEW has to produce, and that's kind of a big part of the reason why AEW's so far ahead in their tapings, and WWE still needs to, needs to catch up.
Yeah.
But the decision to go live every week 3 times a week is absolutely reprehensible.
Yeah, like it.
And if Fox and the USA Network are demanding that they go live for absolutely no reason, because WrestleMania spoilers didn't even get out, for fuck's sake, so no one's going to give a shit about a random episode of NXT. if they are going to hold WWE to the letter of their television contracts while they are still producing new content, then they need to be called on the carpet as every bit as much as WWE.
Well, and then that would be something that could make a great deal of sense. You know, if you want to keep a sense of drama and whatnot, you could record all of the tape shows, or at least as many as you could, in like a week time period or a 2 week time period, and then have everyone take, you know, a full 2 weeks off then after that, and then do a live pay-per-view. Just, I mean, that would definitely give it a whole different vibe if you only did pay-per-views as the live thing and taped everything else. And it would make a lot of sense, too, just to do it that way. Like, it would cut down on interactions and travel and, like you said, like, I don't know anyone that's going to look up Raw spoilers. Like, I'm still not that bored. Even without a job, I'm not bored enough to look up spoilers for anything. What are you going to do, Chris? What are you going to do? Yeah, so, and it is one of those things that I guess you were kind of talking about it, like, I don't know, you know, who is, you know, you don't know exactly who's to blame. Like, obviously, Vince definitely seemed like he was even, he held out trying to do WrestleMania longer than, I think, Dana White trying to do UFC 249, he might have held out about as long as Vince McMahon with WrestleMania, as far as
still hoping to do it in front of a crowd. Yes.
Yeah.
He may have actually held out longer. Vince, I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, but like most people, like, you know, like, I know how much everyone's losing. Like, there's no reason for them to shut down if they didn't have good information to shut down.
Yeah, Vince is an eccentric, you know, 70-plus-year-old billionaire. I mean, he has always done things his own way, seen the world, you know, through his bubble, and has not stepped out of his bubble in God knows how long. It's unfortunate that there's been no one to rein him in here. You know, there's definitely reasons behind the state of Florida doing what they're doing. I mean, for the local economy, for, you know, to be the last bastion for, you know, sports to come in and do what they and put on their shows for their national television contracts in front of no fans, and there's definitely a political element involved in this as well. Very much so. The speculation that a re-elect Trump super PAC that is being fronted by one Linda McMahon plans to dump $18 million into Florida during the course of the next 6 months.
Of course, I'm not completely sure that that's necessary. To be honest with you, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I don't find campaign finance in necessary in any way, shape, or form. But it happens anyway.
It's one thing, because like everyone was kind of like, oh, I wonder if Vince got them to change this, or, you know, to create this rule, and I'm like, I bet you he wasn't, you know, I would imagine that him or Linda or, you know, someone representing the WWE was at the table. But there were other people at that table. You know, it wasn't just the WWE kind of hoping to get this thing passed. And knowing that they're working with a governor who would be pliable. I mean, he definitely seems like, again, he kind of held out longer than most states as far as enacting a stay-at-home policy. Mainly because of, like you said, like political motives. Like, tourism in Florida is just huge. So not having anyone come there is kind of tough. And this is one way to solve it. So, I mean, yeah, the WWE definitely had a seat at that table. How much of the blame they deserve for this is, you know, it's hard to say. And hopefully no one, you know, no one really ends up being a problem. Like, I do know that a WWE employee tested positive, but we're still at the point where none of the wrestlers, as far as we know, have tested positive.
No, as of yet, no wrestlers have tested positive. The positive test is believed to have come from someone who is on screen, but not a wrestler. That name has not been revealed, and I don't think it's appropriate for us to speculate on that here. But it happened. It's allegedly happened after the WrestleMania tapings took place, and then that person quarantined for 2 weeks following. So it was due to people that from activity outside of the performance center. So it's not believed that anyone has been sick with COVID-19 inside of the performance center.
Oh,
at least
yeah.
Anyone who's shown symptoms. And then. But you gotta believe it's coming. I mean, to allow something. I mean, there's no profession on the planet this side of pornography that requires this level of physical contact.
That is that. And I mean, even the booth. Just, you can even forget Jerry Lawler at this point. Even when they were just had Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton doing the announcing, like, they were standing right next to each other. I'm like, oh my god, you guys have space. Like, your camera can accommodate two guys standing apart. Like, I know that they can film wider than two guys shoulder to shoulder. You know, why do you insist on doing this kind of stuff? Like, it kind of drives me bananas. Like, they could definitely, I think it drives me bananas because they're like, oh, they, as far as we know, they clean the mat, or they, yeah, clean the mats after every match. You know, it seems like the facility itself stays fairly clean. It's like, and they're not even doing like, we've talked about AEW having people in the crowd. And I do think after the first week, AEW started to space people out in the crowd better. So, like, the WWE's aware of it enough that they're just like, nah, screw it. We're not even going to put wrestlers in the crowd. But they can't help from keeping the announcers together. It's just like, why is that the only part that's that way?
I have no idea. But, you know, they continue to insist on doing interviews the way that they do them with an interviewer, you know, standing right next to it, wrestlers and putting a microphone right in their face.
Yeah.
I mean, Angel Garza, they still found someone for Angel Garza to kiss on the cheek. That's just, which was just unbelievably ridiculous. That needs to continue to be part of his act.
Yeah, I forgot about that. You know, I don't know why I didn't think about the backstage interviewers, because, yeah, like, you can still create the distance and have the promo or have someone interview someone. Like, it's not that hard. Like, why are you guys making it harder than it is? And I'm about dying. I'm watching the first Eastern Championship Wrestling, and the Sandman has a surfer dude gimmick.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've certainly seen some of that.
Okay. Anyway. The WWE, they just seem inconsistent with their policy. Like, there is no way, like you said, like, the wrestling itself, like, that is, it's high contact. Like, the UFC really is probably the only other thing that there's that much contact. Like, because boxing, I wouldn't, like, even though you're getting punched, like, that's mostly from a glove, and you could at least clean those in between rounds or something of that nature should a boxing match occur. Like, yeah, there's no... there's nothing like that for wrestling. Or for the UFC. Like, I mean, I guess the UFC, you get breaks in between, and you could, I guess, wash down in between... But I don't know if they'd allow that. Man, everyone would be really slick if you had to clean off after every round. Anyway, wrestling is a weird, baffling thing. I do hope that, like you said, like, a lot... I feel like the WWE has definitely featured some certain wrestlers who are closer by... one coming to mind, I know that Angel Garza is one of them, but, I feel like Austin Theory has gotten a spot because he lives down there, or at least partially because he lives down there.
Yeah, I would say so. But then again, everyone in NXT has to live in Orlando every day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was picked... very likely because of his look, because they're high on him, and I'm kind of baffled at the sign at the call up, and that it's continued now, and that they didn't just, and that now that Andrade's back, it is Zelina Vega managing a trio of heels. I mean, it's nice to have a trio of heels like that with a manager. It definitely feels like kind of an old school type of thing. That they don't do it as often, or haven't done very often over the years, or recent years, I should say. So, I mean, I do like it, but I'm not sold on Austin Theory now.
I did think that it was that was maybe a good talking about wrestling portion of things to transition to. Just because it seems like the WWE is reforming a faction that I was not aware of for quite some time that Andrade founded, and it's they're bringing it to the WWE, it would seem, at least their version thereof, Los Ignobrables. Yeah, that's still terrible, and I don't really know how to pronunciate Spanish, but. You know, whatever. It does seem like... I was a little bit surprised, too. I expected, honestly, both Garza and Austin Theory to essentially be hired guns. And then to be on their way out once Andrade came back. But I guess I'm kind of good with the whole thing. I know that Jeremy is a big Austin Theory fan, because he was in Evolve, correct?
Yes.
And I believe Jeremy saw him a couple of times and definitely mentioned his name to me. But I guess I personally haven't seen that much of him. And it was, I guess it's a little bit surprising that he did get that much of a jump already. Just because there are very few guys in NXT that have made the jump that quickly. And I guess it still is kind of weird, like, Andrade has the championship, but it still feels like he doesn't have it, or hasn't been accomplished as, like, the kind of the leader of a faction like that, at least in the WWE. Like, as much as I've liked him, like, they still haven't been terribly consistent about his push over the years.
I mean, it was pretty consistent, and then he got himself suspended, and then he got injured injured before WrestleMania. So it definitely feels like he's barely been around the last, you know, 2 months, because, well, he hasn't.
Yeah, I felt like there are a couple other stop starts that they had, because I feel like he kind of had that big feud right off the bat with Mysterio, and then he kind of got lost in the shuffle for a while, and then they kind of pushed him when Rey came back again, and they had more, even more feuding going on. So yeah, I feel like he's kind of stopped and started a little bit more over the years, but yeah, I guess I kind of forgot that two different things kind of caught him relatively recently to make it more consistent, more inconsistent, just recently at least. And, yeah, I mean, I do like him. Well, I guess I just like that act. Like, it's kind of funny. We went from, when did we think that they were going to break them up? Because they had kind of had something of a split going on between Zelina and Andrade, and all of a sudden we end up with a faction, which is quite the turnabout.
Yeah, definitely quite the turnabout. But it's dealing with modern day Vince McMahon. He just simply changes his mind a lot. 1 week Zelina and Andrade were going to break up, and then the next week they weren't.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing that hurts the WWE, just in general, is just a general lack of consistency. Like, good or bad, if they would be consistent, it would really help out. But you never know what's coming. And I'm trying to think, because did they all have matches last night?
I believe they did. Yes.
Cause yeah, I didn't pull up a review like I normally do. So I definitely remembered Theory and Angel Garza having matches. Was Andrade in the main event?
Yeah, Andrade was in the main event. Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah, I guess all three of them did have the match then. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it was nice to kind of concentrate on them a little bit. Excuse me, and to get them, get some additional exposure that I guess they probably need if they're going to form this faction and push it. I mean, I guess the Shield would be the last heel faction. They didn't have a manager, so, I mean, there is definitely a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a difference, but, heel factions are good. The night they firmly established them as a faction, I probably wouldn't have jobbed Andrade. But, that's the way they decided to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if next week would have done him any favors. Maybe he could have had a follow-up win, but I guess it is.
Well, maybe he could have been the Money in the Bank opponent for Drew McIntyre as the title challenger instead of going back to the Seth Rollins well again. Seth Rollins coming off of a clean loss at WrestleMania, and he's going to be rewarded for that with a title shot at the next pay-per-view. I mean, that's something they haven't done before, but it always annoys me when they do it.
Yeah, I guess I was sort of just looking at it in a, what's that, it's a fresh matchup?
It is. I mean, they've had their singles matches before when Drew was a heel and Seth was a babyface, but as a pay-per-view main event for the title, it is fresh.
But yeah, you're right. Like, just to... Like, it almost seems like one of those too soon. Like, I didn't think about the loss at WrestleMania, but that is definitely a reason for him not to be Drew McIntyre's first opponent. But they did, for, I guess, reasons, burn through Big Show. And, you know, we know that we're not going to get a Brock Lesnar Drew McIntyre rematch that quickly at any point.
No. Brock, well, since it's not looking like, you know, we're getting in front of 10,000 plus crowds anytime soon. Maybe not even until 2021 for that matter. I would assume that they would still want Brock to fulfill his contractual obligations and come back in time for SummerSlam. So I guess you do that then. Whether they're in Boston at the Garden or not, or at the Performance Center, I would imagine that, you know, they're still gonna, you know, involve Brock and things, because, well, they have to pay him regardless. I'm fairly certain Brock is not going to let them renegotiate his deal because of this.
Well, and he definitely does not seem like a guy that is, especially if he's going to be waiting until SummerSlam to pop his head back up. I think that he's going to feel like things are pretty all clear to take a flight down to Orlando to record, a couple of segments for Raw. And then be done with life, you know, and then fly back to the middle of nowhere, Canada.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Brock's, I guess he's set. And now that I think about it, it's just another one of those things, too, where I think one of the reasons that they're going back to the Seth Rollins well is that they've done a terrible job trying to create main eventers in general recently. And, you know, Seth Rollins became a main eventer. Was that 2015? That he cashed in? Do you remember?
Who are you talking about?
Seth Rollins.
When he cashed in, or when he was cashed in on?
When he cashed in against Roman and Brock.
WrestleMania 31, 2015.
Okay, yeah.
I was there.
So, yeah, like, that was 5 years ago. Like, Seth Rollins is, like, one of the more recently made guys, and that was 5 years ago. And then they pulled the trigger too late on Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. About 2 years too late. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, like, part of it is just their bad, again, their bad planning. Like, if there had at least been some consistency to some of these pushes, it would help. And, I mean, even though they're getting pops from people like Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg, like, it's not helping them out in general, because the top guys still need, you know, as much as it's good to give them a feature match with a Brock or a Goldberg, You know, they need someone that's... They do need people that are there more consistently than that. It's, you know, and not really crowning anyone has done them a real disservice as far as who the top guys can fight. Because I guess as I was saying this stuff, like, I was trying to come up with who else he could take on. Do you have any names?
Well, they could have gone with Andrade. Trying to... That's the problem. They beat everybody at WrestleMania. at least all the heels. they beat Seth. They beat AJ. They beat Orton. And AJ's supposed to be, you know, they're gonna, I assume, gonna take their time before they bring AJ back into things. And Orton's been off since WrestleMania.
Oh,
right, there's a weird taping schedule involved.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Seth was the logical. Really, I you know, Seth is probably the logical opponent. The most over, you know, heel they have to challenge McIntyre. It's just the, you know, coming off of a loss to somebody who was also, to Kevin Owens, who has also disappeared since WrestleMania. And, well, if he's living in Montreal, I'm not sure what he's actually doing.
Yeah, I mean, he could be gone a long time if he is in Montreal. Because honestly, like, this past Friday, I guess I was a little bit surprised that Sheamus popped up.
No, Sheamus has been living in, I think, Tampa or Orlando for over a decade, actually.
Oh, because I thought he had posted on Twitter that he was in Ireland when the travel ban got started. So I guess that's where my thought was. I guess they did not realize he lived in although I'm not surprised that he lives in that area.
Yeah, no, I fairly certain he does, and I mean he's got at least legal residency in the U.S. if he hasn't already gotten a citizenship.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean those that are that are stuck overseas were only on work visas.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, then that makes sense then. Just because I guess I had felt like just some of the European stars, I do not feel like I've seen as much of. Because is Balor over in Ireland?
I think he might be, actually, yes. No, wait, he's advertised for NXT this week, but he's also advertised against one of the Imperium fellas, and I'm not sure exactly what their status is at all either, so maybe we're getting a match that was taped in front of the NXT UK crowd before all this happened.
Yeah, that is conceivable. And I completely derailed because I talked about Sheamus popping up. And I don't know. I guess did we have anything more to kind of rewind it back about kind of top tier heels for Drew McIntyre to take on? I guess that's kind of. I was feeling like there were some other big names, but. Yeah, like, unfortunately, Rollins was kind of the best choice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And, once again, the unfortunate part was, you know, was all of Raw's heels, you know, taking losses at WrestleMania.
Yeah, so.
So no one was heated up coming out of WrestleMania.
Yeah, so that, yeah, I guess you didn't really have any good choices, even if you went with someone other than Seth Rollins. And, yeah, some of them are just MIA, because Kevin Owens could certainly play the part if they wanted him and McIntyre to take each other on. But they've kind of been too back and forth with Owens, and I'd kind of prefer him not take on a baby. Although, I guess that is kind of the strange thing. Devoid of the crowd, Kevin Owens versus Drew McIntyre is maybe a little more acceptable, do you think? Like going babyface versus babyface?
I'm not 100% sure about that. I mean, is anything really better without a crowd?
No. Yeah, this whole thing's still just generally been pretty odd to watch the wrestling. Like, even being devoid of the whole Florida situation in general, for it to be one of the few things that's semi-live or semi-new that hasn't been in the record, or, you know, recorded for a while now. Like, I know that some of these TV shows that I'm watching now have probably wrapped up like 6 months ago. Or, you know, maybe it's a little bit less time than that, but it's definitely been for a while at this point. Yeah, I don't know. Wrestling's just really weird right now. So, yeah, I guess because there is no crowd, you could do babyface versus babyface a little bit easier because you're not going to have a weird crowd reaction. But, yeah, not having a crowd is not helping. I don't think it's helping anyone. Like, it makes it feel more lively at AEW since they do have some of the wrestlers in the crowd. But it's still not a crowd.
Yeah, no, it's still not. It is not the same. I mean, some of the stuff, like with the heels heckling, I get a chuckle out of. But other than that, no. Really, what WWE did for WrestleMania was probably the best we've seen of any of this empty arena stuff. But that is because they put so much effort into it. As far as directing it and producing it, encouraging the wrestlers to, you know, essentially create their own noise by constant trash talk, and, well, really it's all the constant trash talk, and there's also, you know, body language and facial expressions, and just keep just continuing just constant noise and movement. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Asuka is the best wrestler, empty arena wrestler in the world. She is the absolute most enjoyable person to watch in this environment.
Yeah, she is. And Kairi Sane did some of her own heavy lifting this week. Not that she didn't still get smashed, which was unsurprising, honestly. I'm trying to think of who she was taking on, because I really didn't Nia Jax. I did not expect Kairi to win that match, but I did think...
No, I did not. I was disappointed they used her in that role.
Oh, yeah. Like, they are definitely giving her a lesser than Asuka push, unfortunately for her right now.
Yeah.
But she, yeah, I thought that she got to deliver a little bit more on the microphone this week since she had her match second. And this was something that, us just talking about, those made me think about, like, you, that and how you were mentioning how much production went into WrestleMania to make it feel that good. This week's Raw, especially, I shouldn't even say this week's, only this week's Raw, but did it feel like just a regular Raw, like any, You know, minus the whole crowd situation, like, that to me felt like just a regular Raw. Like, how it was run, how the promos were done, the pacing of the show. Did you get that vibe, too?
Yeah, it was definitely a very much a back-to-business show. We're going to do Raw the way we've always done it, but we're going to do it in front of no people. Which, that is just, that's just not sustainable. I mean, there have been some, in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania, yes, they relied on tape matches, and maybe it's felt that you know, that people tuned that out in droves. Not that anything else seems to be bringing the viewers back either. There was also some excellent promos, particularly on the last Raw before WrestleMania. There were some really, really good promos on that show, and you know, wrestlers allowed to, you know, talk, you know, from different locations with different backgrounds and just talk as they would talk. And now it's back to my guest at this time. And everything's feeling so scripted and wooden again. Yeah, I was not a fan of last night's Raw.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of laughing that that I see generally good reviews for this for last week's Raw, when I was kind of looking at the topics, because I'm not sure that there is anything more specifically that we need to talk about in general. Like, because I guess, is there anything, we were just kind of talking about the ladies, is there anything more to bring up about them? You know, like, because we had Shayna Baszler, taking on Sarah Logan, because yeah, it's just that whole what is it? The Money in the Bank. They're having Money in the Bank qualifiers, and that definitely helped to make it feel like a regular piece of Raw. yeah, but is there anything that to cover with the ladies, that I guess, do you think they're going to go back to Baszler winning with this, winning the Money in the Bank?
It's very possible. I'm not sure exactly why they're making Shayna jump through this hoop to get her title, her second title match with Becky, though. I'm not sure why Becky needed to be on Raw live at the Performance Center to deliver that promo that set up absolutely nothing for Money in the Bank and set up no new feud for her, or continued her feud with Shayna Baszler. I mean the women's field is definitely a lot more interesting than that men's field they previewed. MVP against Apollo Crews? What?
Yeah, that one was pretty shocking.
That one, and just all of it. They're not going to put. They're not seeming. Other than Ray as a legend, they're really not putting in any big names from the Raw side on in Money in the Bank this year.
Oh yeah, I guess I didn't do a good job of looking at the bracket as a whole. But I do remember seeing that MVP and Apollo Crews, and I'm like, I guess Apollo Crews is finally going over on someone? Was all I thought to myself.
I would assume. I don't think 50-plus-year-old MVP is going to be doing a ladder match. Stranger things have happened, but I don't think so. I mean, Apollo Crews, who they haven't, you know, haven't pushed for 3 years, and all of a sudden one day they're going to decide to push him for a few weeks, and then before they push him back down again. Yeah,
because I don't know who else was on that possible list for the Money in the Bank. Because are they doing it split brands again this year?
Yeah, it's split brands. The other Raw matches are Rey Mysterio versus Buddy Murphy, which could be really good. And then Austin Theory against Aleister Black.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's another part that I'm not the biggest fan of. Just because I don't think you call someone up and have them lose. Unless that's the only thing that they're going to do.
I'm pretty sure Aleister Black's not losing that match. They put behind him pretty strongly.
Yeah, I would be shocked if Aleister Black were to lose that match. Because I certainly did not expect Oney Lorcan to go hanging with Aleister Black. I appreciated that effort in the wrestling ring more than any other this past week. Or at least on Raw this past week. So, that was a nice surprise. But yeah, I fully expected Aleister Black to be winning that thing.
Right.
Okay. Well, I guess the other thing that maybe is worth a quick mention, I was wondering how much the WWE believed in Ricochet and Cedric Alexander as a team. I knew with them facing the Viking Raiders, I would get some type of a decisive answer. I feel like I have been provided that decisive answer.
Yeah, not at all. No. Could have been something that for both of them, but nope. I mean, not that they shouldn't push the Viking Raiders, and the fact that while the Viking Raiders were tag team champions, the Street Profits got a couple of title shots and came up short. Yeah, there's a story to tell there. So, I mean, I'm all in favor of the Viking Raiders, Street Profits having a full-length feud for the tag titles.
Oh, yeah.
But if they saw anything in Ricochet and Cedric Alexander as a team, they just wouldn't have booked the damn match.
Yeah. That was my only thought. I'm like, why are you booking this match? Because I wouldn't have really been a fan of the Viking Raiders losing either. Because, yeah, like you said, like, there's definitely a story to tell. Like, they haven't. Because they haven't really gotten a rematch, have they?
No, the Viking Raiders. I don't know exactly what went on with them, but they seem to drop out of the picture within a very short time of the move to the Performance Center, if not even before.
Yeah, because I feel like. Because they lost in a multi-man match, or a multi-team match, I feel like. And then they had stories to tell with whoever won the belt, and I can't recall exactly who it was. And they've never really gotten a proper rematch, because the Street Profits ended up winning them, and they weren't going to do Street Profits versus the Viking Raiders. Who won them in between? Oh, Rollins and Murphy.
Yeah, Rollins and Murphy, which I still feel like that made absolutely no sense.
Yeah, and that really did throw off the Viking Raiders' momentum, just in general. You know, they haven't really recovered from that loss, even though they, at least as far as I remember, didn't take the pin. So, yeah. Anything else to mention? I think we've covered about all of Raw now. Anything else from the other programs worth covering before we get out of here?
Not really.
Okie dokie. Well, I decided to, last week when I was talking to Jeremy, I did not drink during the middle of the day. This week I decided it was acceptable. So I did a little drive about this past week and stopped in at both Land Grant Brewing and Wolf's Ridge Brewing. At Land Grant, I got one of two six-packs. Was a Peach Basket fruit ale with peach and vanilla. It's a pretty solid and definitely peachy beer. I'm not sure that peach works with beer as much as some of the other fruits that have been put in beers, but it's still a pretty solid beer, and it would work better if it were warmer out right now. So, spring, come at us. Come at us. Chris and I are both, we're hoping for spring here. Just bring it. So, I'm at DeFrango 11. That is the bell time beer of the show. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.